This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
The Tampa Bay Rays, they're defunct.
They don't exist anymore?
They don't exist anymore. I just decided today. We should make a call, let them know, but I just decided they're out.
I would rather watch the painting guy. Who's the painting
guy? Bob Ross.
I'd rather watch Bob Ross than watch my favorite baseball team play in Tampa.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
What a matchup. It is bracket season. What a matchup. Your favorite team playing a game in Tampa or Bob Ross painting a lake and a mountain.
Give me the lake all day long.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
This year, of course, I say of course, maybe you didn't know, the Rays are playing in a different stadium. Bulldog has a Tropicana field problem. Maybe a lot of people do. This year, the Rays have moved to the Yankees spring training facility in Tampa. The other place is in St. Pete, by the way, because of damage done during a storm to the, you know, regular stadium. So they've moved to an outdoor facility this year that is, I think, I heard, shaped like Yankee Stadium. That's what teams are doing now, like the Red Sox spring training ballpark has a green monster, like it's the exact dimensions. So that should mean the Rays should be able to hit home runs to right field like the Yankees. Looks so easy. I mean, I probably could do it. I mean, it's so impressive to, never mind. The home run that Wells hit in the first inning today for the Yankees went, like, landed in the first row. There's not a home run in any other stadium. Like, it still counts. So, not bitter, just saying the Rays have moved, that's all. And I don't understand Bulldogs Bob Ross, to use that as the, like, kind of, it's this bad. It's so unsatisfying to watch a game in Tampa that I'd rather watch this guy paint. I'd love to watch that guy paint. People love that. You could pick a lot worse shows. There are a lot of shows he would not, when tested, I believe, watch over a Rays game against the Red Sox. I'm pretty sure. That's just talk. 803-0550 for your calls. Opening day. Got some more time here if you want to share your story for why your favorite baseball team is your favorite baseball team. Opening day today. I went over mine earlier. It took an hour, basically, for me to go through all my different favorite teams over the years. Right now, I'm not attached. Like I said, though, Toronto is the only team I could see myself getting back into. I'll never get into the Mets again. The Met thing was the combination of getting home from school, like middle school, high school. They're on TV, and they're good and fun. That was the recipe. That was the formula. And that's a pretty tough one to resist. Good, available, at a time when most, you know, live sports were not available. Just happened to be close enough to the market. It was on local cable. So that plus, you know, Gooden, Strawberry, Hernandez, Carter, all of it. We had a guy before. I didn't mention it to him because he went into a few different places. Remember the guy from the first hour who said how his dad liked the Reds, but gave up on the Reds when he signed up for a free T-shirt or something, and he didn't get it. And it's like, that's it. I've mentioned this before. I doubt you remember or care, but this is my wife with Gary Carter. She was a Met fan as a kid, just like I was. And just coincidentally, she didn't grow up in Western New York, but was a Met fan and wrote a letter to Gary Carter asking for an autograph. And she never got a response. And thus, she hated Gary Carter. I'm like, we had this conversation. She and I had a conversation about this like 2 weeks ago. Like, he's dead. Can you just let go? It's probably not even something he did maliciously. It's just like either piles of letters, or maybe somebody dropped the ball on the staff. Maybe you gave him the wrong address. I don't know. Like, it could have just been circumstance. You didn't get the autograph. Like, nope. Refuses to not hate Gary Carter. That's right there on her bio. If she had a bio, that's what it would say. Refuses to stop hating the late Gary Carter. 803-0550 for your calls. Here's Jack next. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Mike, great story. I like that one about your wife. That's actually fun.
Yes. But she's not the type to just hate somebody forever and never let – she's not the type to do that. But in terms of Gary Carter, it's never going away.
Anyway, I'm calling about Chicago Cubs. In the 80s, I was from Buffalo and everything else. I went to Chicago. I was there for the mid-80s. I went to Wrigley Field many times, probably how – Bulldog fell about Fenway, but really what it came down to was the fans. The fans were heartbroken year after year. Lovable losers, right? And I could always relate that with the Bills and the Sabres. And when the Cubs finally won, of course, took 100 years. Hopefully we don't have to wait that long here in Buffalo.
We're on our way.
You know. But, yeah, it was really amazing time. I was there when the lights were just put on in Wrigley. There was a lot of controversy when they put lights on. You had Harry Carey. I was there during Dawson and Sandberg era. And it was great baseball.
You know, it really is a special place to go. I've been there four times, maybe. And every time, it's really just amazing that it exists where it does, and just the joy in the crowd and the people who are, you know, so many of the fans there on a given day will be like just sort of experiencing it maybe for the first or one of the first few times.
And the neighborhood just, bars and everything. It's really cool. I actually, one story I'll just add to it. It was like one of my friend's father's was a big Cubs fan. He was from Chicago. And I was there in 86 where they lost a playoff run with the Padres. And there used to be a bar called Cubby Beer, which I visit quite often. Mm-hmm. And the guy offered me a bottle of champagne. I'm like, why would I want a bottle of champagne? He goes, well, the Cubs lost. We're just giving these bottles. They couldn't open up in the locker room. So I brought it to my friend. I brought it to my friend's dad. And we made a pact. This is in the 80s, right?
Yep.
So anyhow, I told him, I said, let's make a deal. If the Cubs ever get to the World Series, we'll open that bottle of champagne. And that's what happened. When they played the Indians, the gentleman called me out of the blue, said he still had my bottle of champagne. We were hanging out in his living room. We opened it. It was the worst smelling champagne you ever could. It was like vinegar through his whole house.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. If it's whiskey, it's going to taste great. But
nah, not
if it's
with champagne.
If it's wine, it's not going to taste great. That's right. Wow. So. That the champagne, did you say the champagne was like slated to go to the clubhouse if they won? And
Yeah, wow. Since they lost, what the Cubs did is they just gave those bottles to the local bars outside Wrigleyville, and they were just whatever. They just gave them away or whatever they did with them. But they couldn't open them because they were losers, like they were all the time. So,
yeah.
But it was great to see that they finally won for, you know, one time in their life. And I'm, like I say, I've called you many times about the Bills and Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just hoping one time before our life, same thing like a lot of people call your show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Jack, this is really good. I like the story a lot. Thank you. Wow. 1984. So, 84, they're up 2-0 in the best of five playoffs to the Padres, and they lose all three in San Diego, and they gave away all the champagne. That's interesting. That's cool. You know it can't last, though. Like, a simple internet search will tell you it's going to be bad. Like, you can't drink it. It sounds more than like whiskey or something. It sounds more like the gum in the pack of cards. Like, you open a pack of cards from the 80s, the gum is not going to be good. But, you know, I get the sentiment. I have a bottle. So my grandfather, who died before I was born, had a little bit of a liquor collection. And my father, you know, just kept it, but hardly ever opened anything. And then one day, 10 years, I built a bar. And around that time, he gave me all the booze. Like, here's all the booze. We don't touch it. Take it. And some of that stuff is really weird. We've opened a couple things. No champagne. No chance. There's no wine involved here. But there's a bottle of Canadian Club. With the label, it says 1967 on the front, on the label. And when I got this, I'm watching Mad Men at the time. And Mad Men, they're always drinking, you know, Canadian Club. Don Draper would have had this bottle on his desk in the show. And so I just looked it up. Like, what is this going to taste like? If I open this 1967 aged Canadian Club whiskey, is it, like, drinkable? And it's like, apparently, yes. Apparently, it tastes the same. Maybe better, but it's not ruined. Does that just last forever? Apparently it'll taste good. I still have never opened it. I've had it for a decade now. I've got it. I know right where it is in my house. I love the label on it. You know, it's almost like when I was collecting cards, like an old card. Like, this is from then, 1967 Canadian Club. Champagne, though. Yeah, not surprised. That didn't work out. Here's Joe next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Well, I want to tell you how I became a Philadelphia Phillies fan.
Okay.
Grew up in New York. My mom is from Philadelphia. My dad didn't like sports. My grandfather made me a Philadelphia Phillies fan in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was really weird, you know, living in Rome, New York, actually, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Being a Philadelphia fan with all the Yankees and Mets and everyone over, always asked me as a kid, "How are you a Phillies fan?" I'm like, Mom. Philly,
my fault.
Grandpa said, "You're a Philly fan."
That's very similar to my story with the Reds. My dad was not interested. My mom's from near Cincinnati, and so it was the Reds. Very similar.
So it was very hard to get Philadelphia Phillies hats back in the 70s and 80s. It wasn't like today. Yeah, you know, as a kid.
Right.
It was very hard to get.
You could never watch a game. You could never buy a thing. No jerseys. No, right. It was like in a different world.
But I got to go to the set to watch a game. I've been to Citizens Bank Park. And our fans, yes, we're a little different in Philadelphia. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But no, I've been a Phillies fan all my life. I can actually rattle off the 1980s lineup.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. And even the 70s, you mentioned the 70s first. Those were good teams.
Well, fun fact, Steve Carlton, Cy Young winner for a terrible, I think they only won 30 games in 72, 71.
I want to say 10 and 27. I want to say 10 and 27 for St. Louis.
Yep.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
Steve Carlton was, those guys were Mike Schmidt, Greg Luzinski.
Right.
David Fry, Gary Maddox.
Maddox.
Boa, Booney.
Right.
Trio.
Yeah.
It's fun. Baseball is one of those sports that, for a lot of people, I think they become a fan of a team for strange reasons.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Right. Thank you, Joe. I have this wrong. 27 and 10, not 10 and 27. Carlton for the Phillies. What year do I want? 1970? He was 10 and 19. He'd win the Cy Young, though. All right. Well, I'm glad to have this clarified, even if it was through a mistake. 1972 Phillies, his first year with the Phillies, 27 and 10. 41 starts, 30 complete games. 346 and a third innings. Jeez. Yeah. Carlton, lefty. Those Philly teams, I couldn't like them because I was Reds. And then Mets. I always hated Philadelphia. That has never actually changed. I've never liked a Philadelphia sports team at all. I've always disliked kind of all of them. Tomorrow we'll do hated instead of liked. Today's love. Tomorrow we can do hated. Because if I did hated, that's been more indelible for me. And Philadelphia teams just never, ever. I go there every year. I enjoy being there. I have friends there. They're normal people. They love sports. I love that, you know, a town that loves its sports. But I just cannot get with the Phillies have been good the last few years. I hate it. It really makes me upset that the Phillies are, when the Phillies are good, I'm not good. No offense to Joe, of course. You know, that's his team. I'm not taking it out on him. There's nothing to do with him. Noah is next. Hi, Noah.
Hey, Mike. I just want to say first off about the old beverages. I've got a Sabres 20th anniversary Pepsi bottle that's tempting to pop open someday. Ooh. And I've got a Bills Coca-Cola 2-liter from the Super Bowl years, neither of which I don't think would be good anymore. But would
they fizz when you opened it?
That is the – I got to say the Pepsi, the Sabres Pepsi is in a glass bottle. The Coca-Cola Bills 2-liter is in a plastic 2-liter bottle, and it is completely, like, caved in on itself.
Yeah.
Like, it's very
yeah.
– it does not have shape anymore.
No.
So – but to the point of today's topic, I'm truthfully not really much of a baseball fan ever. However, that changed during COVID – when the Blue Jays came here to Buffalo, suddenly I found myself very invested in the Buffalo Blue Jays.
Oh, it was the best.
Even got a couple of tickets to a few of the games, went out and bought some Blue Jays gear, and found myself watching them on TV just because they were here. So, you know, and this past summer we went up to Toronto and caught a game as well. And you know, now I think the Blue Jays might be my team. I quite literally never watch baseball, but them being here during COVID was something special, I think.
I agree with that. I loved that so much. I can't even really believe that happened. It was like the only good thing about COVID was that the Blue Jays moved. It's just amazing, you know, as such a baseball fan forever to like sort of wake up in the morning or sit here in the afternoon and think about like, oh, the Yankees are 15 minutes away. Like, that was so good. I went to 10 games, probably. Kind of wish it were more, but loved that. I loved how the Bisons and the Jays together, how wonderful was that for the Bisons, right? Like, they get all this money poured into their ballpark, the facility and, like, the field, everything that meant. And I loved that they redesigned the concourse to the extent that instead of restrooms, it would say washrooms, like it would in Canada. It would say washrooms. So it wasn't I that noticed that. Somebody else noticed that, told me. I think it might have been my brother-in-law who was here from Toronto. I don't know if that's right because the border was closed for a time there, but somebody else noticed that, and I just loved that they even went that far to turn restrooms into washrooms at the ballpark. Pat Malacaro, by the way, broadcaster for the Bisons, will join me in about 12 minutes to talk about their opener tomorrow. It looks like it could rain tomorrow, but hopefully won't. Let's go to Michael next. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Okay, well, I'm gonna give you Cincinnati Reds is my favorite team, and when I was in sixth grade, I was in the library, and I picked up a book that was an autobiography of Johnny Bench.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, what made me a fan is you realize that Johnny Bench played for Buffalo back in the '60s when we had a minor league team.
Yes.
Okay. Well, he was in a bus crash. Every player on the team except for him got killed.
Oof. Really?
Every player.
Like when? Is he as a child?
No, when he was in the minor leagues.
Not in Buffalo.
Yeah.
No, are you really? Are you sure about this? I've never heard this.
Well, look it up. It's an autobiography that was on. That's what made me a Cincinnati.
You're telling me the entire Buffalo Bisons team was killed in a car, in a bus crash, except for Johnny Bench? Wouldn't like everybody know that?
Back in the '60s,
whenever it happened, wouldn't everybody know that? I don't know. I have my doubts here.
Well, look it up. That's all I'm telling you.
Okay.
Okay. I read the autobiography. Read
okay.
it.
Might want to read it over. I don't know. If he's right, I'm sorry. It just feels like something every sports fan would know that story, and I've just never heard that. But anyway, speaking of baseball, I am wearing a Padres visor today, one of the teams that has not been mentioned as a favorite team. The San Diego Padres. I have never been a fan of the Padres. I've got no story. The reason for the visor, and I have a collection because it's opening day. I just grabbed it, and I have it because every time I go to a park for the first time or a city to watch a game for the first time, I buy a visor if they have it. Some teams more disappointing in the visor department than others. Remember the Tigers when I went to Comerica Park for the first time, their visor selection, they're all like this, that plastic, almost like ladies golf visor from the old days, just like almost unwearable. You'll never see me wearing the Tigers one, but most of them are like this, you know, just cotton, comfortable. Saw San Diego against the Mets. They're with my son, who was 10 months old at, Petco. And just like, it is so much fun when you're at a, you know, at a major league ballpark, walking up for the game, don't have a ticket, just go to the box office. What have you got? He was so small that I only needed one ticket. And those days are over. One ticket, and you're buying a single, you can almost sit like anywhere. So we sat second row, third base dugout, and just, you know, the feeling, right? I'm in San Diego with my son at a Mets game against the Padres. Santana pitched for the Mets. David Wright is like, from me to you. And so special. That day is memorable, and I won't tell you the whole story, but for other reasons, you know, in terms of like my life and my family, very, very important day. He and I leave San Diego like the seventh inning or something. Didn't need to stay for the whole thing. He's so young. And in the car, put the game on in the car, and it's the day where the pitcher Galarraga for the Tigers is about to throw a perfect game.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Game, but there was a bad call on the last out at first, and so it wasn't a perfect game. I think Joyce was the umpire, called him safe. And so he lost his perfect game on that. That was the same day where I was at Petco to see the Padres. More baseball next. Pat Malacaro to preview the Bison season. After a break, Sal Capaccio joins me at 5. Mike Shope here. This is WGR.
O'Neill drives one the other way. That's headed out toward right field. He's done it again! Unstoppable opening day machine. Tyler O'Neill has homered for a sixth consecutive year on opening day.
Is that good? 6 years in a row on opening day? I mean, that's a streak. 6-0 now, Toronto losing to Baltimore. Not great. I mean, season started like an hour ago. 6-0. Game's not over. Fourth inning. The parent club of the Bisons trailing the Orioles on this opening day. By the way, the last caller with the Bisons death story. I haven't found it yet, but a couple people are tweeting that when Johnny Bench was in high school, there was an accident, and varying accounts, but that there were fatalities in this accident. But, you know, it was not when he played for the Bisons. I think he broke his thumb playing for the Bisons. Much, you know, not good, but...
It's not great.
Not fatal.
Correct.
Pat Malacaro joins us now. He'll be broadcasting Bisons games again this season. That's exciting. The opener is tomorrow. Pat, thanks for jumping on with me.
Happy to do it, Mike. And actually, the two Johnny Bench stories that relate to the Bisons, you're right. He did break his hand catching with the team in one of his first games in with the Bisons, and that's why he had his hand in front, and now that's he hit his hand behind. But also, he is the only player in professional baseball to hit a grand slam off of Jim Palmer, and that game was played in Hyde Park because several games had to be moved from Buffalo, and there's a funny story about that. Basically, Jim Palmer, this is the only time in his career he gave up a grand slam. It was a Johnny Bench here in Western New York up in Niagara Falls.
How about that? Was that at Sal Magley Stadium, or was it even that?
I believe it was at Hyde Park. It was called Hyde Park Stadium at the time.
Okay. And Palmer might have been in Rochester, pitching for Rochester?
Yes. Earl Weaver was the manager, I believe, and basically said, don't worry about this kid, just throw a pitch, and he did, and Bench hit it.
And Palmer never gave up a slam in his career after that, mm-hmm. in Major League career. That is so good. That's a much better story than the whole team died in a bus crash. That is much better. Good for you, Pat. Yeah, Bench was on with us once, and he talked about the injury, and what, he had his right hand behind his glove. Is that how he would do it?
Yes.
Okay.
And then he got hit by either a foul tip or just didn't catch it correctly, and that's why he eventually would put his hand behind his back. That wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, I can picture that. That's so good. So the Bisons this year, how does it look, Pat? I mean, Candell, the manager, is I wasn't sort of aware that he's coming up on like some pretty good milestones as the Bisons manager.
Yeah, this is his fifth season with the team. He actually, if you're a Blue Jays fan, you may recall in 2022, he was promoted to the interim bench coach position when John Schneider was installed as the Blue Jay manager at the time. So really, it'll be about 4.5 years if Casey, from the start of the season, manages all the way to the end. He's approaching 300 wins, which only one other manager in the modern era from 1985 until now has ever done. So he's in about 266, I believe, is the number for Casey right now. So he's really closing in on 300. And then Marty Brown, who's in the Buffalo Baseball Hall of Fame, has the record of 312 wins as a Bisons manager over parts of three seasons. Four seasons. He would be the next one on the list, the only one above him on the list. So Casey could get there this year if the Bisons even just play 500 baseball. He should get to that mark over 150 games.
Yeah, you would think. I guess maybe the only way he doesn't is if the Toronto thing goes so badly. Maybe they call him up there. But, yeah, you would think so. Marty Brown. So is Marty Brown the manager of the last championship team?
Yes, 2004, and then he was the manager again in 2005 when they lost to Indianapolis in five games, and also returned in the first year of the Blue Jay affiliation in 2013. He was back in affiliated baseball. He went over to Japan for a while and was managing the Blue Jays minor league system for a couple of years and just happened to be back in Buffalo again.
Okay. I was at least one of those playoff games in 04. I mentioned earlier today, came to just really get into the Cleveland team that when all those, like, something like 22 out of 25 of those guys had played for Buffalo.
It was the golden era of baseball here, at least in the modern era to me, of Bison baseball. You think about championship corner out beyond left field. It was almost every single year. If the Bisons didn't win the division from 1997, the old American Association, going to the IL in 98, the International League, pretty much all the way through 2005, there's only one or two years that the Bisons did not make the playoffs. And that championship team between Grady Sizemore, Brandon Phillips, Johnny Peralta, I think Cliff Lee at one point was on that team. I mean, the pitching staff was loaded. You're right. I mean, there was just so much talent. And really, we saw all that talent on display for about a 10-year window in the Indians affiliation. Hoping that the Bisons can get back to something like that here. Casey is the manager. Was the last manager to manage a division winner. It was in 2021 when the team started the year in Trenton and finished the year here in Buffalo.
Right.
So, hoping that we can get back to some of those glory days of seeing all those guys promoted to the big leagues, kind of like look, you know, when a team has injuries and things don't go your way, you see the prospects go up. That's kind of what we saw last year with the Bisons being promoted to Toronto, and some of those players will start here this year again because the Blue Jays made some offseason acquisitions and now are able to let those players develop more.
Right. Alan Rodon is up there, and he is in the starting lineup today. Rodon was excellent for Buffalo last year. This would be his major league debut today?
It is, and you talk about somebody that had a quick rise to the organizational ladder. He was actually college teammates with Will Robertson, who's an outfielder for the Bisons, into his second season now. Robertson was drafted in 2019, and Rodon was drafted just a couple of years ago, both out of Creighton, where they were college teammates. And the thing that John Schneider has mentioned a lot about Alan Rodon and Ross Atkins is just his preparedness coming to the field. He struggled when he came up to AAA last year, hitting in the mid-200s. He made a subtle adjustment. He's one of those guys, so he grew up in the Milwaukee area. He has a batting stance similar to Craig Counsell, if you can remember that. He's pretty much straight up, and the bat is way behind his ear hole.
Yep.
And he made a subtle adjustment to change the way he stepped with his footing, and it really made a big difference. He was the player of the month here in the International League, hitting .354 in August. He was just tearing the cover off the ball. Really good outfielder. He can play any of the three outfield positions. Center field may be the toughest because he hasn't played there as much, but he can play either corner outfield. And the one thing that Will Robertson had told me when Alan Rodon was going to join us, because I wanted to get the scouting report on him, he said, as a freshman, now Will Robertson was a junior when he got drafted by the Blue Jays, but as a freshman, when they were teammates, Alan Rodon was in Will Robertson's lifting group, and he was the guy that could lift the most. He was the strongest of, it was with sophomores, juniors, even seniors, and even as a freshman, he's just that strong, and he's carried that all the way through.
Interesting. I talked to Mike Wilner a couple of days ago about him, and he said that he was studying to be a rocket scientist at Creighton. Rodon.
Yeah, and that's one thing the Blue Jays have really focused in on, a lot of players that are very smart and cerebral and are able to understand the strike zone. So it shouldn't be a surprise that someone like Rodon is very intellectual, and even someone who's not going to start the year in Buffalo because he's on the injured list, Josh Kasevich, another one of those players that comes out of the University of Oregon, a second-round pick, really good plate selection. Spencer Horwitz is a name that was here the last couple of seasons. These guys really figure out a way to make that an advantage for them, and I think that's one of the things the Blue Jays look for, is the guys that can really focus in on and really make the pitchers work a little bit harder and work the strike and the count to their advantage.
With Pat Malacaro, the Bisons are scheduled to open tomorrow at 2. He'll be on the call. It's against Rochester. Hopefully the rain stays away. I've been into some of these pitching prospects over the years with Toronto. Manoa, Nate Pearson was interesting for a minute, Tiedemann, but injuries have kind of derailed all of them. Who's this year's version of that guy, if there is one?
Jake Bloss would be the name to look out for. He's currently ranked the number 6 prospect in the organization, according to MLB Pipeline. He was part of the Yusei Kikuchi trade last year. Joey Loperfido will be in Buffalo as well. He was part of the trade, Will Wagner. But for Bloss, he's a guy that has 6-7 different pitches in his arsenal, but he throws hard. That's what makes him a little bit different. Played collegiately his final season at Georgetown, so you want to talk about another guy who is very cerebral on the field and especially on the mound. He made 8 starts with the Bisons at the end of last season after being acquired, and struggled to maybe find a rhythm, but when he finally did, the results, the wins and losses weren't there, but you could tell the stuff was a lot better. I had really good spin rate. The breaking pitches were very crisp and sharp, so there's high expectations for Bloss. He made his major league debut with Houston last year, didn't get into a game with Toronto, but is definitely somebody on the radar that he can hit mid to upper 90s with the fastball, spot it very well, and then again with those other secondary pitches that he can work and really keep hitters guessing. I think big things are expected from him, and even tomorrow's starter, Eric Lauer, who is a veteran who has actually opened a season before with San Diego in 2019. I think that's one of the nice things, is you've got the young prospects in Bloss, but you also have some veterans who can help a guy like Jake Bloss along the way when he struggles. And that's another thing the Blue Jays have tried to do over the years, of have those mentor type pitchers that understand, I may go to the big leagues, I may not, but while I'm in AAA, I need to help some of the young guys along too. And I think that's one of the reasons why a guy like Eric Lauer was signed to a deal this winter.
You know, for me, I'm somewhere between casual and hardcore. I want there to be like one really cool prospect, you know, somebody that I'm expecting to see play in the majors, and then I can have my I saw him play when story. And then also I want a couple guys that I know who they are, right? Name recognition. And so you mentioned Lauer, and I think Christian Bethencourt would be this.
Yes, definitely. Several years in the big leagues. He's going to pretty much, I think, assume the starting catching role here in Buffalo. In the past couple of years, you look back, whether it be Danny Jansen, Alejandro Kirk for just a little bit of time,
yep.
Even Reese McGuire, there were some catching prospects that came through Buffalo. The last couple of years, it's been veterans that you may need that backup catcher role. Tyler Heineman, who is with the Blue Jays now, has been up and down in the organization a handful of times. So Christian Bethencourt, even an Ali Sanchez, who's had a little bit of big league experience, those guys will be here in Buffalo because if Tyler Heineman goes down with injury, struggles at all, I think you could see Christian Bethencourt, who really, I think, to me, everything I had heard coming out of spring training really endeared himself well to the organization and someone that everybody spoke highly of, so would not be a shock at all to see him in the big leagues.
The Blue Jays on the board in their opener against Baltimore on a two-run Andrés Giménez home run here in the fourth, 6-2 Orioles. Pat, today I've been asking fans to hear their backstory on why whoever is their favorite team. What is yours?
I grew up an Oakland A's fan.
All right.
I always tell people I'm so old that
careful.
As a kid growing up, you know, playing T-ball, wiffle ball, whatever, even basketball in the summer, I really didn't spend a lot of time in the house in the summer at night. So really, I'd only watch baseball on Saturday afternoons. And because I'm a little bit older, I'm in my 40s, my first memories of baseball were the late 80s. And the Bash Brothers, the Oakland A's, were always good. They were always on TV. And I had a Jose Canseco poster hanging up in the basement at my parents' house. I mean, I was all in on the A's. We would drive to Cleveland to see them play at Old Municipal Stadium once a year. Just really enjoyed watching the A's as a kid growing up. So, you know, the Moneyball story that was written by Michael Lewis and turned into a movie, something that I really followed as a at that time, like high school, early college years. But the A's were my team forever. And unfortunate the way that it ended in Oakland. I'd wished that it would end up, you know, different, maybe a new stadium, figure out a way to make it work. But, you know, talk about the Blue Jays playing here in Buffalo. I think the Oakland A's and even Tampa Bay to some extent because of their situation kind of took the blueprint that the Blue Jays and Bisons had from here at this ballpark and are going to make it work out in Sacramento in the A's case for the next couple of years.
Did you get to the Coliseum? I went to one game there.
I didn't. And
okay.
Really, my only chance was going to be last year, and I decided, you know what? I don't want to be there for the final couple of games.
Yeah.
I don't know if I really want to be there for that, you know?
I get that. Yeah, that would have been weird, if not ugly. I saw Toronto play out there. I guess it would have been 98 or 99. Whatever year it was that the Giants opened their stadium that they're still in, that was really cool. I was out there with a girlfriend, and the Giants had opened. It was what? Pac Bell. Mm-hmm. Originally, and like they were talking about how incredible it was, and you could never get a ticket. Like the whole season was sold out, you know, too bad. So we're out there, she's there for work, and I just called in the morning at the perfect time it was the Expos, when the Expos players gave back their tickets that they weren't using. So not only did we get two for this Friday night game at the new stadium, it might have been like the fifth or tenth game in the history of the stadium, but we would sit right behind the plate because that's where, like, those are the good seats. The players are not using them. And I went to Oakland that week, so I got both boxes checked from Northern Carolina. Now I have to get to Sacramento, apparently. That's going to count.
In San Francisco, I've been to that ballpark, and that's one of those stadiums. I mean, to me, that is my favorite because as much as I enjoy PNC Field down in PNC Park down in Pittsburgh, the backdrop is man-made. It's created by the skyline, the skyscrapers. In Northern California, you can't recreate what they have in the bay there in San Francisco. So to me, for my money, I could sit in the upper deck in the last row at that stadium and be content for 81 games a year.
I hear that. Behind the plate? That view from behind the plate, yeah. Pittsburgh is the same in that way. I think the best view would be from home plate, but I like that point. Very good, Pat. Well, congrats on your success. Hoping for a good season here and a dry day tomorrow.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Looking forward to getting the broadcast underway with Duke McGuire starting at 1 over on the sister station, the Bet 1520.
All right. Best to Duke as well. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Yeah, boy. thinking about that trip now. San Fran, the first time. Been there another time, maybe two. But that was really amazing. Like, I just remember, like I said, hearing about how you cannot get a ticket. Like, oh, that's too bad. And then I was lucky. I'm sure there are people that know exactly when, you know, they've got somebody on the inside or something, exactly when certain tickets come available. It might have been like 10:30 in the morning of the game, something like that. And yeah, we're good. We've got like 30 seats. So lucky me. Sal Capaccio coming up at 5. He'll take a break from watching his Yankees here in their opener. They're up 2-1 on Milwaukee in the 6th. The Sabres host the Penguins tonight, pregame at 6. This is Mike Schoep on WGR. Sal coming up. We'll get back into some draft stuff from yesterday. But first, it is contest time. Be caller 5-716-221-4WGR. That's 4947 to win a pair of tickets to see Disturbed with Daughtry and Nothing More. KeyBank Center next Friday, April 4th, courtesy of Live Nation. Get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Thinking about the draft today, because I do it every day. Abdul Carter, I saw, is not planning to work out at Penn State's Pro Day. Why should he? He's going top three. Like, he's probably, anyway, top four. No real upside there. I think it goes like this. Ward to the Titans at 1. Kind of everybody's saying that now, so I'm not going to push back against that. And I think it's fine, you know. Maybe he'll be great. Maybe he'll be a franchise guy for Tennessee. There's enough reason to think that's possible. I think with Sanders, there just isn't the same upside, it seems, in the consensus analysis. So I don't think he goes to Cleveland or the Giants. Both teams could easily make an argument for it. But I think there's enough potential. End of the first round, early second, whether these teams trade or just stay put, for somebody they could talk themselves into, tell themselves a story, as we say, for Jackson Dart, Jalen Milroe, Tyler Shug, I guess that's how you say it, that cluster of quarterbacks. I mean, it's not a top three overall pick, but I kind of think the Browns and the Giants might decide they're better off waiting, and that's because of Carter and Travis Hunter. Where you have two players, Hunter kind of by himself is two players, but you have guys that are like elite at, you know, other positions. So I think 2 and 3 should be Carter and Hunter. And after that, nobody needs a quarterback for a bit. Maybe the Jets could talk themselves into Sanders, maybe the Saints. You know, we went through this yesterday a little bit with Chris Trapasso, but I would kind of guess that Sanders does slide. Because I think the Browns and the Giants might just feel like the other guys are too good to pass up versus what Sanders profiles as. And then, you know, he could go anywhere if that happens. A trade up, like what happened with Justin Fields in his draft, where the Bears moved up with the Giants to pick him. You know, a team in the middle could think very highly of him and make a big move. And that's great if you want to, you know, if you get that call. Raiders at 6 or whoever it is. It's great. That's a great call to get. Like, all right, you're going to give me 2 firsts, 2 seconds, you know, for this pick? Like, yeah, I'm totally in. Imagine wanting an offensive tackle in this draft and having a team make an offer like that to you for Sanders. Like, that's the dream. So that's my guess at the moment, is that he slides. I'm not sure Sal and I did much on him yesterday. Maybe here, or after the update anyway. Sal Capaccio will join me next. Tomorrow, Sammy P, Sam Paniatovich. The tournament resumes tonight. And also Sigmund Bloom will be on the show tomorrow. The Sabres host the Penguins tonight, pregame at 6 with Paul Hamilton here on WGR.